Hello, Vince. On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, I want to thank you for joining us today. This is Bob Keebler, and just yesterday, the IRS issued major changes to Form 706 for 2011. Vince, I wanted to chat with you about those changes, and perhaps we'll touch base a little bit on what's going on with 2010. So, Vince, frame this out for us. What are the major changes in the 706 for 2011?
Well, the major changes in the form itself are actually fairly minor. The major change is really embedded in the instructions for 2011. So on the form itself, the major change would be the bottom of Schedule R, where you have a marginal rate of 35%, and then you have a new divide-by number, which is based upon the marginal rate. In fact, it's 1 plus the 35% divided by 35%, which gets you a number that's 3.5-something. It's a six-digit number. So the form itself has essentially that change. There is one other minor change on page 2, part 4, line 3, in reference to the marital status of the decedent. They add a parenthetical to see instructions if more than one marriage. And then below the checkbox for divorced, there is a new line for explanation. So I can get into what the instructions do by way of change. And that has to do with the portability of the exclusion from the first spouse to the second spouse. And that has to do with how one elects to preserve the exclusion from the first estate. That's the so-called deceased spouse's unused exclusion amount. And the instructions on page 12, part 4, lines 3 and 4 are the key. So what one has to do is, in the case of the first estate, in a spousal, a married couple scenario, to preserve the exclusion that's not used in the first estate for use in the second estate, the IRS says that it's the filing of a timely and complete Form 706 that is considered to be the election. And so just the filing of the form is sufficient. Now, there's an interesting additional piece that says if you do not want to allow the surviving spouse to use the unused exclusion, then you can do one of three things. One is to attach a statement to Form 706 indicating that the decedent's estate, this is the first estate, is not making the election to preserve portability. Or across the top of page 1 of the Form 706, enter the phrase, no election under section 2010 C5. Or finally, simply don't file a Form 706 in the first estate. There are risks associated with that, but that's the long answer to a short question.
Well, no, Vince, no, that's very helpful. So let's say that we represent someone that has an estate of all real estate, it's hard to value, second marriage, and it's worth $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. In that case, what happens if I clearly could elect, you know, I could attach a statement to the Form 706 indicating that the decedent's estate is not making the 2010 C5 election, or alternatively, what happens if I do nothing? I mean, let's say I do nothing. Does the spouse then take that $500,000? What if the IRS comes in subsequent to filing and says, you know, that land wasn't worth 4.5, but it was worth 4.9 million? What portable amount does the spouse get? The amount that was eventually determined on audit, or the amount that you claimed when you filed the 706?
Well, good question, but I'm not sure we even get there, because if you don't file a 706 in the first estate, then whether the first estate's estate were 4.5 or 4.9, it wouldn't matter. You have not preserved the exclusion for the second estate, so it's gone. You're barred from claiming it.
But what if I just want to run my statute? Then I'd file, and then I get into that situation where I better be very clear that I'm only leaving my spouse what I have left after audit.
Yes, I think, I don't know that the, at least the instructions address the question of how much of an exclusion you've preserved. It seems to be you're preserving it or you're not preserving it, whatever it is. I do believe that there is, at audit, probably some adjustments to take place. So in your scenario, they would adjust the numbers by $400,000, and then you compute the what credit that represents, and I believe that could be used on the second estate. I'm not certain because it might be contained in the rev proc or the notice, but I'm not sure about that.
Now let's jump to the second estate. How does the second estate actually report the unused exclusion that carries over from the first estate?
Yes, great question. On the instructions, page 6, instructions for part 2, line 9, the maximum unified credit amount, they state that the maximum unified credit is the tentative tax on the applicable exclusion amount. As defined in the Tax Act of 2010, the applicable exclusion amount is the sum of two things. One is the basic exclusion amount, which at the moment is the $5 million from the second estate, plus any unused exclusion from the first estate. So you have to determine that applicable exclusion amount, and then you determine what credit that represents based upon the tax table. And you then report that number on line 9 of the 706 page 1. Now, the 706 page 1 doesn't look any different than it used to. It still says maximum unified credit. You simply have to put into that line that recalculated number to reflect both exclusions. A little side point, the current draft of the 2011 706 has in parentheses after maximum unified credit the phrase applicable exclusion amount. That's clearly wrong, and they're going to fix that. It should read applicable credit amount like it always did. There is no distinction in the credit side of things between a basic credit amount and applicable credit amount like there is for the exclusions. So they simply have the one term to encompass that composite number.
So basically, line 9 has to be computed on a separate schedule.
Correct. And they do say that you should determine the tentative tax on the applicable exclusion and enter it there. Actually, they don't say anything about an attachment, but probably it would be a good practice to do that.
Now, the way I understand the law, though, and this is maybe getting too deep right now, but the way I understand the law, Vince, is that the applicable credit that transfers from my spouse, okay,
mm-hmm.
that is still subject to audit. So let's say that I die today with my $4.5 million worth of real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I give $500,000 to my wife, and she dies 25 years from now. The government can still audit my original 706. And with that being the case, then, how do we protect clients from penalties when they're putting a number in box 9 that if they didn't have that number, they'd actually have to physically pay in a tax with this return? And I can see the government coming and wanting to hit you with that 5% a month penalty,
mm-hmm.
Or at least the 0.5% extra a month when you failure to pay.
Right.
So any thoughts on that, Vince?
Well, so in the instructions for 2011, page 12, for line 3, there is a sentence near the end that says, attach the predeceased spouse's form 706 and a calculation of the unused exclusion amount. So that's how 25 years later the IRS knows how you've determined initially the exclusion amount to be rolled forward from the first estate to the second estate.
So basically, we have to attach that old return. The IRS potentially has a shot at looking at that again. And I think there's going to have to be some guidance on what happens if they adjust that as far as the service's ability to provide or impose penalties based solely on your good faith effort of taking your surviving spouse's credit that was left. Now, Vince, I want to come back with one final question. And there's a lot of discussion that virtually every estate of someone who died after 2010 needs to file a 706 so that they can grab the deceased spouse's exemption amount. And to me, that makes sense in some situations, but clearly at the very bottom of the economic scale, that wouldn't make sense. But as you ratchet up, it's going to make more and more sense.
Yes, but you also have the unlikely but a possible scenario of a first estate which has very little in it, and then the surviving spouse wins the lottery. And that scenario, the second estate could benefit from the unused exclusion amount from the first estate, equivalent to as much as $5 million, added to the second spouse's $5 million. So by not filing a 706, even in a small estate, you run the risk of losing out on that portability. And by the way, we've done some calculations, and if you figure there are about 2.6 million people who die every year, and approximately 37% of them are married at death, there are something like 950,000 estates that wouldn't otherwise need a 706 to be filed that might want to consider filing one just to prevent that loss of the portable exclusion in that scenario of the lottery win.
So this is a real area where we need to continue to discuss this and educate lawyers, CPAs, trust officers, those professionals involved in filing the state tax returns.
That's correct, and that's why you want to think twice before you follow the third option that the IRS provides on page 12 of the instructions on how not to allow the surviving spouse to claim the exclusion, and that is to not file a 706. You want to look twice at that and consider making it a more deliberate decision.
Well, Vince, this has been very informative, and thank you for spending so much time with us today. I think very important for practitioners to read these instructions carefully and to really focus in on portability. The other place I think we have to be careful of is if I do not want my spouse to have my portability, meaning I'm worried that I've given $4.6 million worth of property to my children. There might be a discussion with the service on the valuation of that property. I may then want to elect to be very clear that my surviving spouse doesn't get whatever's left of my exclusion. So on behalf of Lineberg Information Services, Vince, we just want to thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Bob. It was my pleasure.